Well, thank you very much, conference, for that very warm welcome. But it does contrast with the external environment as we are meeting at an unprecedented time of crisis. We may not be seeing necessarily large-scale violence or confrontation on the streets, but we are witnessing a gradual and persistent erosion of the pillars of this society, the pulling apart of those things that hold this place together, the deterioration of our public services, the undermining of our economic potential, and the dashing of so many hopes and dreams. With the Good Friday Agreement and successive periods of devolution, Northern Ireland has had many opportunities to build on the foundations that were laid, to press on and transform this society, and to deliver integration, reconciliation, and justice. But instead, these opportunities have been squandered through the exploitation rather than healing of divisions, through populism and the failure to engage in evidence-based policymaking, and through clientism, cronyism, and corruption. No political system can survive, let alone flourish, without a basic level of trust and respect between the key actors. And who knows where we would be today if people had indeed kicked on from what was arguably the high watermark of devolution between 2010 and 2012. But instead, we have seen an accelerating deterioration of relationships, the absence of devolved government for 2 years, two whole years, conference, the potential unpicking of what had been successful policing reform, the political weaponization of how we deal with our painful past, and finally, Brexit has taken the situation to an even deeper abyss. Conference, the sobering reality is this, that in the 21st anniversary year, it's difficult to envisage how the Good Friday Agreement could today be made. That is a sign as to how far our politics have regressed. And yet, we must recognise the strengths that lie here in Northern Ireland, the skills and the creative talent of our people, our landscape and our attractions, and the clear demand of a majority of our population for progressive social reform, economic opportunity, and a shared and integrated society. Amidst all of this, we must not lose sight of this central reality. Regardless of all the tensions and forces pulling us apart, this rich and diverse society only can work based upon sharing and interdependence. That brings us neatly back to Brexit. There's no such thing as a good or sensible Brexit. All versions of Brexit... All versions of Brexit leave the UK worse off, with Northern Ireland particularly badly exposed. Perhaps for the first time in history, a government is taking a course of action that will leave the country weaker politically and will undermine its economy, whilst in full possession of the facts. This is a massive self-inflicted wound. The June 2016 referendum result was fed by populism and easy answers to complicated problems and challenges that were little to do with membership of the EU. And that campaign was fueled and twisted by significant breaking of electoral law. The three key rationales for Brexit were always delusions. Taking back control makes no sense in a world where pooled sovereignty is essential to tackle shared problems. Running an independent trade policy counts for little when opportunities are greater through maximising economic relationships with the EU and benefiting from its existing trade deals while recognising a stronger leverage and the potential to agree even more. Restricting immigration makes little sense when key elements of the economy in our society depend upon migrant labour, particularly so here in Northern Ireland. Global Britain is a massive fantasy, harking back to an imagined or distorted sense of empire. And implementation has gone even worse than most people's fears. The UK invoked Article 50 without any idea of the type of Brexit it wanted. It has spent the past 2 years negotiating with itself, with the government, the Labour front bench, backbench Brexiteers, and of course the DUP, all indulging in incompatible red lines, creating unrealistic expectations, imaginary solutions, and unicorns and delusions. Notwithstanding this, Brexit will fail, either through an economic catastrophe or through it being reversed. This inevitable failure of the Brexit process will, of course, be laid at the door of Ireland and the wider EU. And indeed, we must be alert to the forthcoming stab-in-the-back narrative from the Brexiteer zealots that the perfect version of Brexit would have been delivered if that pesky EU had not gotten in the way. In this way, it will reflect the commitment of the die-hard communists who refuse to let go of their ideology despite the examples of the Soviet Union, People's Republic of China, or the German Democratic Republic. But we must be wary, conference, of the scapegoating that will come from those betrayal narratives. Brexit poses huge challenges to Northern Ireland. Any version of Brexit raises the spectre of new divisions, boundaries, and friction. It poses threats to identities and rights, to the all-island economy of sales and supply chains, and to future opportunities and livelihoods. In our approach to Brexit, Alliance is seeking to represent the best interests of the people of Northern Ireland through supporting political stability, defending the Good Friday Agreement, maintaining open borders throughout these islands, and protecting our economy. We are putting people first, their jobs, their opportunities, their livelihoods, their futures. And we must never forget that Northern Ireland voted to remain. We have three potential ways through Brexit. Any and all of these have cross-community support and reflect the majority of public opinion here. So our priorities and preferences are in order. First, a people's vote to reconsider Brexit with the option to remain in the EU. Secondly, if we can't get that, the whole of the UK remaining in the single market and the customs union. And then thirdly, if those aren't available, a special deal that helps Northern Ireland economy and defends the Good Friday Agreement. By contrast, the UK government and their DUP allies are acting contrary to the interests of the UK as a whole and to Northern Ireland in particular. The DUP does not speak for Northern Ireland. And in particular, they're now very much at odds with large elements of the business community and civil society. Indeed, in seeking the hardest Brexit possible and risking even a catastrophic no deal, the DUP seem prepared to tear the last remaining strands of fabric holding this society together. So the UK Parliament has essentially three choices. One, approval of the deal. Secondly, no deal. And thirdly, no Brexit. So look at those in order. First of all, any withdrawal agreement is going to have a backstop. The UK has waxed and waned in this central reality and has ended up squandering its political capital and engendering mistrust. And it's not just the current government that we have to watch, but what could be the next one? We need the insurance against the mendacity and duplicity of the David Davis, Boris Johnson, and Jacob Rees-Mogg's of this world. The developments over the past year reinforce the reasons why the backstop is so necessary. However, we welcome the ongoing understanding of the Irish government and wider European Union to protecting that Good Friday Agreement and being so resolute around an open-ended, all-weather backstop unless and until something better comes along. But let me be clear on a few things around the backstop. The backstop was envisaged as the minimum involved to avoid a hard border and to protect the Good Friday Agreement, including North-South cooperation and rights. It only arises because the UK is leaving the European Union. The backstop is not a constitutional issue. Northern Ireland remains part of the UK unless and until something changes through the principle of consent. It is consistent with devolution, and Northern Ireland already does things differently in many areas, including the single electricity market. The backstop builds on existing precedents of some limited checks down the Irish Sea. But it does not cut off Northern Ireland from the Great Britain market. Rather, it allows us to more easily be part of both the UK and EU economies. All that said, the backstop isn't perfect, but it isn't meant to be. It's an imperfect and defensive intervention to address a challenge that no rational person would want. It's not the same as EU membership, and it falls short in many respects. The backstop only covers goods and doesn't address services or the free movement of people. And there are major concerns of what is on offer regarding the protection of rights, the robustness of the common travel area, and also whether the definition of North-South cooperation fully captures all the current and future all-island economic and social interactions. But the backstop is consistent with our own proposals in Bridges Not Borders, and some of the language we have used to articulate it reflects the concepts and phrases that we have developed and used. It can be a foundation from which to build for the future, if we find that Brexit is going ahead and a softer version of Brexit hasn't been adopted. In that regard, given the potential comparative advantages that the backstop could give to Northern Ireland through having that competitive foot in both the EU and UK markets, it is stunning that not only are some parties turning their backs on the backstop, but they're turning it into a massive constitutional crisis. Northern Ireland risks missing out on an historic opportunity. The government and the DUP are going down a dead end in trying to change the backstop. The Prime Minister is shamefully putting what is left of the cohesion of the Conservative Party and their fix with the DUP ahead of the national interest. And opportunities to build a more centrist approach to Brexit around the customs union and single market have consistently been spurned. Conference, it is incredible that the nature of Brexit remains so unclear with just 27 days to go. Even more amazing is the willingness of some people to flirt with a no-deal outcome. A no-deal amounts to the UK becoming a third country and unilaterally leaving all of the UK mechanisms, instruments and arrangements and defaulting to other baseline systems such as WTO rules and trade. For Northern Ireland, the consequences would be particularly severe economically, politically, emotionally and psychologically, plus in terms of security. It would be very difficult to avoid an economic border on the island of Ireland, as the two different jurisdictions would be in different customs and regulatory zones. Both the UK and the EU under WTO rules would have legal responsibilities in this regard. This would have massive implications politically and from a security perspective. New tariff and non-tariff barriers would come into play. Manufacturing, in particular the agri-food sector, would face tariff barriers to accessing the EU market, and the service sector would suffer from different legal frameworks emerging for what are even still equivalent regulatory systems. And contrary to the delusions of the Brexit fantasists, the UK has little negotiating power in all of this. A no deal may be bad for the European Union, but the UK would be the worst affected by far. The German car manufacturers are not rising up against the backstop. In most negotiations, both parties can walk away and revert to the status quo ante. But under Brexit, the consequences is that the UK goes over the cliff edge. And while there may be a need for certainty as soon as possible, certainty around a bad outcome is not the certainty that most people and businesses want. Going over the cliff edge may be pretty certain, but it's also pretty terminal. At this stage, it looks like Parliament is poised to delay Brexit, at least for a few months. This may buy at least some time, but it would be fairly pointless unless it is used for reflection and reconsideration. But Parliament still seems to be against every possible scenario and cannot work out a majority for what it is for. So for us, Conference, the best and most coherent and democratic route through Brexit is a people's vote. Alliance has led the way in championing the people's vote here in Northern Ireland. It was the leadership of Alliance councillors that saw first Newry, Mourne and Down Council, I think by a few minutes, and then Belfast City Council passed resolutions in favour. The 2016 referendum may have been the biggest UK vote to date, but it was a stark choice between a clearly defined Remain option and an undefined leave option. Questions still persist regarding the fairness and transparency of the process. Many false and unattainable promises were made, including the health funding pledge on the side of a bus. Furthermore, the complexities, risks, and impacts of Brexit upon so many areas of life are now much more apparent. Democracy is an ongoing and active process. It cannot be a betrayal of the people who voted in 2016 to now check in and again with the same people, given what has happened. What do some people have to fear? We must also consider that well over 1 million young people have now joined the electorate. Indeed, there should have been votes at 16 back in 2016, and there should be votes at 16 today. Indeed, it would be a tragedy if the UK ultimately left the EU and in particular went over the cliff edge in a no-deal context if a majority of people don't actually want that to happen. Any referendum at this stage would require an extension of Article 50 and would take maybe 24 weeks from start to finish, and Parliament would need to legislate and set the question. For us, the optimal approach would be a multi-preference vote between Remain, the proposed deal, and the no-deal. And Remain must definitely be a choice. While unpalatable, it's unlikely that a referendum would be viewed as legitimate and conclusive without the no-deal option, and the Electoral Commission would undoubtedly advise us as such. It is said that a new referendum would fuel further division, but the UK, sadly, is already badly divided. We have to heal, but it is far better to heal on the more rational platform of EU membership than slavishly following an approach that makes us all worse off. So, conference, if the opportunity comes for a people's vote, we must take that. But we also need to bank the backstop and avoid that catastrophic no-deal outcome. What happens on Brexit is going to have major influence upon the future direction of this region, and in particular the prospects of political progress. How we address Brexit should not be a constitutional issue. But we must nevertheless recognise that Brexit has placed the constitutional question back on the table, rather than being essentially parked as it has been over the past 20 years. Alliance supports the principle of consent, and the rules for change are well established. We respect everyone's right to have their different constitutional aspirations, and indeed we are a party of people from all sorts of backgrounds. Alliance is always up for inclusive and constructive debate, but the priority for now has to be to sort out Brexit and to make this society here work in every and all circumstances. Political deadlock is having a huge impact on our public services and our economy. Some good reforms may have happened over the past decade, but equally major reforms have been ducked and huge opportunities missed. Northern Ireland was already starting from a lower base than most of the UK due to its many structural problems, and we have fallen behind the rest of the island of Ireland. Devolution is not a magic wand, but every day without devolution sees more and more damage to our public services and to our economy. The longer this goes on, the harder it's going to be to catch up, never mind to get ahead. Direct rule is not a realistic option for a divided society of Northern Ireland that needs shared governance. This week we've seen the local budget announced with little scrutiny. It's a series of quick fixes to plug the holes in a sinking boat. Northern Ireland's public finances are in a mess. We're a long way from that strategic multi-year budget linked to a programme for government with clear economic, social and environmental plans. But without ministers who can take policy decisions and drive reforms, we will continue to have an unsustainable spending pattern with inefficiencies tolerated and public services eroding, and opportunities to improve the economy and society passed up. Shamefully, hundreds of millions of resources are tied up every year in trying to manage a divided society rather than investing in a shared society for all. This party will continue to advocate for and advance shared housing and integrated education, not just for sound economic and financial reasons, but for sound societal and educational grounds. And conference, policing reform has been one of those success stories of the peace process. But we must nevertheless be alert to the dangers of things moving backwards. We must pay tribute to the work of the police service of Northern Ireland, and in particular recognise that officers continue to take risks and make sacrifices to keep the community safe and to uphold the rule of law. And it is of fundamental importance that we have an effective police service with strong accountability that is properly representative of the entire community. We must acknowledge that there's more work to be done in this regard. Policing and the wider criminal justice system, and indeed a culture of lawfulness, are central to tackling the ongoing scourge of paramilitary activity in our society. Far too many communities remain under the grip of organised crime and coercive control. We cannot have a normal society unless this is comprehensively addressed. We must also recognise that the current diverse and peaceful mechanisms for dealing with the legacy of the past are not working. There are large numbers of victims and survivors who are still bearing physical and psychological wounds, experiencing mental trauma, with practical needs still not fully addressed. They continue to have significant expectations for truth, justice and accountability. The past cannot be swept under the carpet, and coming to terms with our past is central to the process of reconciliation, and the rule of law must always be paramount and not blind to injustice. The Stormont House mechanisms represent the best and last opportunity for a comprehensive system to deal with legacy. There will be, of course, some changes that need to be made, but this template is the only way forward. Alliance is also campaigning for a pension for those severely injured from conflict-related injuries. In many cases, these are life-altering circumstances interfering with their ability to earn or to do things most people take for granted. They've had to essentially live off benefits. Many of these injuries date from the early years of the Troubles. I was pleased that we were able to work with MPs and peers last autumn to move this issue along a little, but it needs to be brought to a conclusion quickly. To paraphrase John F. Kennedy, we will do all these things not because they're easy, but because they are hard. The people of Northern Ireland have the right to demand better than what currently passes for a political system. It's our task to do the hard yards in terms of delivering better. The gaps in our society may be wide and may be getting even wider, but nevertheless, they must be bridged. The challenges may be great, but they must be overcome. The values of Alliance, namely equality, human rights, respect, opportunity, the rule of law, inclusion, rationalism, internationalism, and of course being pro-European, are as relevant as ever, indeed more so. And conference, there's no other sustainable way forward for this region other than through sharing, integration, and reconciliation. Thank you, conference. And in closing, it's now my distinct duty to introduce our party leader. The past year has seen little signs of leadership in Northern Ireland. But there has been one clear and very honourable exception to all of that. And that has been the role that our leader has played in standing up for those values that I've just outlined, for demanding progress, and indeed taking the initiative when others have failed to do so. So conference, like me, you're very much looking forward to hearing what our leader has to say. So it's my great honour to introduce our leader, Naomi Long, MLA. Thank you.